Britton asked again. Still, he did not answer.
I asked you a question, boy.
No, sir. I didn't drive her to school.
Where did you take her?
Well, sir, she told me, after I got as far as the park, to turn round and take it to the loop.
She didn't go to school?
Mr. Dalton asked, his lips hanging open in surprise. No, sir.
Why didn't you tell me this before, Bigger?
She told me not to. There was silence. The furnace droned. Huge red shadows swam across the walls.
Where did you take her, then?
Britton asked. To the loop, sir.
Whereabouts in the loop?
To Lake Street, sir.
Do you remember the number?
16, I think, sir.
16 Lake Street?
Yes, sir.
That's the Labor Defender Office, Mr. Dalton said, turning to Britton. This Jan's a red. How long was she in there?
Britton asked. About half an hour, I reckon, sir.
Then what happened?
Well, I waited in the car.
She stayed there till you brought her home?
No, sir.
She came out?
They came out.
This man, Jan, was with her then?
Yes, sir. He was with her. Seems to me she went in there to get him. She didn't say anything. She just went in and stayed a while and then came out with him.
Then you drove him?
He drove, Bigger said.
Weren't you driving?
Yes, sir. But he wanted to drive, and she told me to let him. There was another silence. They wanted him to draw the picture, and he would draw it like he wanted it. He was trembling with excitement. In the past, had they not always drawn the picture for him? He could tell them anything he wanted, and what could they do about it? It was his word against Jan's, and Jan was a red.
You waited somewhere for him?
Britton asked. The tone of curt hostility had suddenly left his voice. No, sir. I was in the car.
And where did they go?
He wanted to tell how they had made him sit between them. But he thought that he would tell that later on, when he was telling how Jan and Mary had made him feel. Well, Mr. Jan asked me where was a good place to eat. The only one I knew about were white folks. He said, white folks, very slowly, so that they would know that he was conscious of what was meant. It on the south side was Ernie's Kitchen Shack.
You took them there?
Mr. Jan drove the car, sir.
How long did they stay there?
Well, we must have stayed.
Weren't you waiting in the car?
No, sir. You see, mister, I did what they told me. I was only working for them.
Oh, Britton said. I suppose he made you eat with him.
I didn't want to, mister. I swear I didn't. He kept worrying me till I went in.
Britton walked away from the trunk, running the fingers of his left hand nervously through his hair. Again, he turned to Bigger. They got drunk, huh?
Yes, sir. They was drinking.
What did this Jan say to you?
He talked about the communists.
How much did they drink?
It seemed like a lot to me, sir.
Then you brought him home?
I drove him through the park, sir.
Then you brought him home?
Yes, sir. That was nearly two.
How drunk was Miss Dalton?
Well, she couldn't hardly stand up, sir. When we got home, he had to lift her up the steps.
Vickers said with lowered eyes.
That's all right, boy. You can talk to us about it, Britton said. Just how drunk was she?
She passed out, Vickers said. Britton looked at Dalton.
She could not have left this house by herself, Britton said. If Mrs. Dalton's right, then she could not have left.
Britton stared at Bigger, and Bigger felt that some deeper question was on Britton's mind.
What else happened?
He would shoot now. He would let them have some of it.
Well, I told you Miss Dalton told me to take the trunk. I said that 'cause she told me not to tell about me taking it to the loo. It was Mr. Jan who told me to take the trunk down and not put the car away.
He told you not to put the car away and to take the trunk?
Yes, sir. That's right.
Why didn't you tell us this before, Bigger? Asked Mr. Dalton.
She told me not to, sir.
How was this Jan acting? Britton said.
He was drunk, said Bigger, feeling that now was the time to drag Jan in definitely. Mr. Jan was the one who told me to take the trunk down and leave the car in the snow. I told you Miss Dalton told me that, but he told me. I would have been giving the whole thing away if I had told about Mr. Jan.
Britton walked toward the furnace and back again. The furnace droned as before. Bigger hoped that no one would try to look into it now. His throat grew dry. Then he started nervously as Britton whirled and pointed his finger into his face.
What did he say about the party?
Sir?
Oh, come on, boy, don't stall. Tell me what he said about the party.
The party? He asked me to sit at his table.
I mean the party.
It wasn't a party, mister. He made me sit at his table, and he bought chicken and told me to eat. I didn't want to, but he made me, and it was my job.
Britton came closer to Bigger and narrowed his gray eyes.
What unit are you in?
Sir?
Come on, comrade. Tell me what unit you're in.
Bigger gazed at him, speechless, alarmed.
Who's your organizer?
I don't know what you mean, Bigger said, his voice quavering.
Don't you read the Daily?
Daily what?
Didn't you know Jan before you came to work here?
No, sir. No, sir.
Didn't they send you to Russia?
Bigger stared and did not answer. He knew now that Britton was trying to find out if he were a communist. It was something he had not counted on, ever. He stood up, trembling. He had not thought that this thing could cut two ways. Slowly, he shook his head and backed away.
No, sir. You got me wrong. I ain't never fooled around with them folks. Miss Dalton and Mr. Jan was the first ones I ever met, so help me God.
Britton followed Bigger till Bigger's head struck the wall. Bigger looked squarely into his eyes. Britton, with a movement so fast that Bigger did not see it, grabbed him in the collar and rammed his head hard against the wall. He saw a flash of red.
You are a communist, you goddamn black son of a bitch. And you're going to tell me about Miss Dalton and that Jan bastard.
No, sir. I ain't no communist. No, sir.
But what's this?
Britton jerked from his pocket the small packet of pamphlets that Bigger had put in his dresser drawer and held them under his eyes.
You know you're lying. Come on, talk.
No, sir. You got me wrong. Mr. Jan gave me them things. He and Miss Dalton told me to read them.
Didn't you know Miss Dalton before?
No, sir.
Wait, Britton.
Mr. Dalton laid his hand on Britton's arm.
Wait.
There's something to what he says. She tried to talk to him about unions when she first saw him yesterday. If that Jan gave him those pamphlets, then he knows nothing about it.
You're sure?
I'm positive. I thought at first, when you brought me those pamphlets, that he must have known something, but I don't think he does. And there's no use blaming him for something he didn't do. Britton loosened his fingers from Bigger's collar and shrugged his shoulders. Bigger relaxed, still standing, his head resting against the wall, aching. He had not thought that anyone would dare think that he, a black Negro, would be Jan's partner. Britton was his enemy. He knew that the hard light in Britton's eyes held him guilty because he was black. He hated Britton so hard and hot, while standing there with sleepy eyes and parted lips, that he would gladly have grabbed the iron shovel from the corner and split his skull in two. For a split second, a roaring noise in his ears blotted out sound. He struggled to control himself. Then he heard Britton talking.
"Got to get hold of that Jan."
"That seems to be the next thing," said Mr. Dalton, sighing. Bigger felt that if he said something directly to Mr. Dalton, he could swing things round again in his favor, but he did not know just how to put it.
"You suppose she ran off?"
he heard Britton ask. "I don't know," Mr. Dalton said. Britton turned to Bigger and looked at him. Bigger kept his eyes down.
"Boy, I just want to know. Are you telling the truth?"
"Yes, sir. I'm telling the truth. I just started to work here last night. I ain't done nothing. I did just what they told me to do."
"You sure he's all right?"
Britton asked Dalton.
"He's all right." "If you don't want me to work for you, Mr. Dalton," Bigger said, "I'll go home." "I didn't want to come here," he continued, feeling that his words would awaken in Mr. Dalton a sense of why he was here. "But they sent me anyhow."
"That's true," Mr. Dalton told Britton. "He's referred to me from the relief. He's been in a reform school, and I'm giving him a chance." Mr. Dalton turned to Bigger.
"Just forget it, Bigger. We had to make sure. Stay on and do your work. I'm sorry this had to happen. Don't let it break you down."
"Yes, sir."
"Okay," said Britton. "If you say he's okay, then it's okay with me."
"Go on to your room, Bigger," said Mr. Dalton.
"Yes, sir."
Head down, he walked to the rear of the furnace and upstairs to his room. He turned the latch on the door and hurried to the closet to listen. The voices came clearly. Britton and Mr. Dalton had come into the kitchen.
"My, but it was hot down there," said Mr. Dalton.
"Yes."
"I'm a little sorry you bothered him. He's here to try to get a new slant on things."
"Well, you see him one way and I see him another. To me, a nigger's a nigger."
"But he's sort of a problem boy. He's not really bad."
"You got to be rough with him, Dalton. See how I got that dope out of him? He wouldn't have told you that."
"But I don't want to make a mistake here. It wasn't his fault. He was doing what that crazy daughter of mine told him. I don't want to do anything I'll regret. After all, these black boys never get a chance."
"They don't need a chance, if you ask me. They get in enough trouble without it."
"Well, as long as they do their work, let's let them be."
"Just as you say. You want me to stay on the job?"
"Sure. We must see this Jan. I can't understand Mary's going away and not saying anything."
"I can have him picked up."
"No, no, not that way. Those Reds'll get hold of it and they'll raise a stink in the papers."
"Well, what do you want me to do?"
"I'll try to get him to come here.
I'll phone his office, and if he's not there, I'll phone his home. Bigger heard their footsteps dying away. A door slammed, and then all was quiet. He came out of the closet and looked in the dresser drawer where he had put the pamphlets. Yes, Britton had searched his room. His clothes were mussed and tumbled. He would know how to handle Britton next time. Britton was familiar to him. He had met 1,000 Britons in his life. He stood in the center of the room, thinking. When Britton questioned Jan, would Jan deny having been with Mary at all, in order to protect her? If he did, that would be in his favor. If Britton wanted to check his story about Mary's not going to school last night, he could. If Jan said that they had not been drinking, it could be proved that they had been drinking by folks in the cafe. If Jan lied about one thing, it would be readily believed that he would lie about others. If Jan said that he had not come to the house, who would believe him after it was seen that he had lied about his not drinking and about Mary's going to school? If Jan tried to protect Mary, as he thought he would only succeed in making a case against himself. Bigger went to the window and looked out at the white curtain of falling snow. He thought of the kidnap note. Should he try to get the money from them now? Hell yes. He would show that Britton bastard. He would work fast. But he would wait until after Jan had told his story. He should see Bessie tonight. And he ought to pick out the pencil and paper he would use. And he must not forget to use gloves when he wrote the note, so that no fingerprints would be on the paper. He'd give that Britton something to worry about, all right. Just wait. Because he could go now, run off if he wanted to, and leave it all behind, he felt a certain sense of power, a power born of a latent capacity to live. He was conscious of this quiet, warm, clean, rich house, this room with this bed so soft, the wealthy white people moving in luxury to all sides of him, whites living in a smugness, a security, a certainty that he had never known. The knowledge that he had killed a white girl they loved and regarded as their symbol of beauty made him feel the equal of them, like a man who had been somehow cheated but had now evened the score. The more the sense of Britain seeped into him, the more did he feel the need to face him once again and let him try to get something from him. Next time he would do better. He had let Britain trap him on that communist business. He should have been on the lookout for that. But the lucky thing was that he knew that Britton had done all his tricks at once, had shot his bolt, had played all his cards. Now that the thing was out in the open, he would know how to act. And furthermore, Britton might want him as a witness against Jan. He smiled while he lay in the darkness. If that happened, he would be safe in sending the ransom note. He could send it just when they thought they had pinned the disappearance of Mary upon Jan. That would throw everything into confusion, and would make them want to reply and give the money at once and save the girl. The warm room lulled his blood, and a deepening sense of fatigue drugged him with sleep. He stretched out more fully on the bed, sighed, turned on his back, swallowed, and closed his eyes. Out of the surrounding silence and darkness came the quiet ringing of a distant church bell, thin, faint, but clear. It tolled, soft, then loud, then still louder, so loud that he wondered where it was. It sounded suddenly directly above his head, and when he looked it was not there, but went on tolling, and with each passing moment he felt an urgent need to run and hide, as though the bell were sounding a warning. And he stood on a street corner in a red glare of light, like that which came from the furnace. And he had a big package in his arms, so wet and slippery and heavy that he could scarcely hold on to it. And he wanted to know what was in the package, and he stopped near an alley corner and unwrapped it, and the paper fell away, and he saw it was his own head. His own head lying with black face and half-closed eyes and lips parted with white teeth showing and hair wet with blood. And the red glare grew brighter, like light shining down from a red moon and red stars on a hot summer night. and he was sweating and breathless from running, and the bell clanged so loud that he could hear the iron tongue clapping against the metal sides each time it swung to and fro. And he was running over a street paved with black coal, and his shoes kicked tiny lumps rattling against tin cans, and he knew that very soon he had to find some place to hide, but there was no place, and in front of him white people were